Rogers, Dusty Dvorak. The exhibition season for OU and OSU is now over with wins over McNeese State and South Dakota. It was good to see Spencer Rattler and Tanner Mordecai out there. Good to see Drew Brown for the first time get some significant snaps. Dusty, in those games went kind of about how we thought that they would go for each team. Still some things to work on, but yet the stars shone brightly for OU and OSU.
Yep. And
Tyler Wallace, huge.
How fast is he? I can't wait to see what he runs a 40 in. I'm telling you, man, I'm sure they had it, but when he got up to full speed, when he took that little bubble, he hit the sidelines and he took it to the house. You know how they track top end speed? I'd like to see what he was at. He was rolling down the sidelines, man.
Yeah, he was getting after it.
He's talented. I just thought, you know, Mark, I don't want to spend too much time. I thought that both teams did what they needed to do. Oklahoma could have named their number. South Dakota. The one negative I thought, though, was the holding penalties. I didn't like that. The offensive line left side struggled. Proctor and Swenson, they had some issues. So if there was, you know, some negative, I thought maybe you could look there. But, I mean, Oklahoma put up, Mark, they put up 733 yards. They scored 70 points on 69 plays. I mean, the quarterbacks went 24-30 combined with three quarterbacks and six touchdown passes, and they ran it at 7.9 a clip. Stevenson had the big run. Good to see him hold on to the football. He lost the fumble against Houston the week before. Kennedy Brooks, Mark, he looks really good. It's hard to really – the level of talent on the field between Oklahoma and South Dakota, the discrepancy was huge. I had CeeDee Lamb. It was good to see him get going. I remember we had a lady call last week that was worried about CeeDee and his confidence and getting the ball.
I was thinking about her during that game.
I was too.
They did get him going.
They did. They early and often, right? And one of them got called back initially on a holding call. But he goes 6 for 144. He's so good. I thought he had a nice punt return in the third quarter. Those three five-star freshmen, as advertised, as I've told you, I think Hazelwood's the best of the bunch. How good's he, Marcus?
They're all good.
They are good.
They all look really good.
Spencer Rattler can spin a little bit, huh? That ball comes out of his hand a little bit different, doesn't it?
It does. I think, yeah, the future is bright, man, with all that offensive talent there at OU. Let's say hi to Matt Ravis. Hello, Matt.
Oh, yeah.
Hello. How's it going, guys?
What's
up, buddy?
It's going well, man. Going well.
Hey,
do you want to – here's what we're going to do. We're going to talk college football.
Did you guys go to the game?
In the noon hour. I did not go to the game. I wanted to watch LSU – and Texas, so I was able to watch both of them at the same time.
I was there.
How was the crowd?
Like in terms of people being there or in terms of energy?
Well, it probably wasn't a lot of energy. People being there, do they still pack it out?
Yeah, for the most part. Obviously, you know, people leave early. Sure. They leave in the third quarter and all that sort of thing. Student section wasn't all the way filled up. That's not something you want to see. I thought it was decent, though.
Okay. Sorry, Marcus. Go ahead. What were you saying?
No, that's fine. We're going to talk college football this hour. We're going to get into the NFL next hour because there's so much football to cover. We're going to try to kind of focus in a little bit on what happened. Dusty, I watched some of your game. Maryland was one of my picks, and so I was
nice pick.
Pretty impressed with the way that Maryland played offensively. Their running back, McFarland, looked really good to me. But then as the morning went along, I had to take my focus away from that one, which was Blowout City, and then get to Michigan and Army. And, man, what a great game that was. It really was like – just an old-school throwback. You could tell what Army was going to do. So disciplined. And they had the shot, just like in Norman a year ago. They had the shot. They threw an interception in the end zone. But I was really impressed at how they stopped Michigan's offense. And I think Michigan's quarterback play was not very good. They have a hard time. You couldn't hit open guys. Patterson was pretty poor. But Army is for real, man. They are just so good at what they do. It's fun to watch. It's fun to watch that.
Jeff Munkin, what a job he's done with Army. And taking both Oklahoma and Michigan in their backyards in consecutive seasons to overtime. That's really impressive. Real quick, Mark, here we go. Let's since Matt Ravis fired up, we can throw one of them out there. Here is a little bit from that Michigan survival of the Army Black Knights.
Hopkins stepped up. Michigan has a football! And the Wolverines survive! Quiddy Pay knocked it loose and grabbed it!
I know he worked for our competitor. I love Gus Johnson, man. Can I get that one more time? Give me some Gus. I always think the guy, he may have a heart attack while on air, but I love the passion. Give me one more time, Gus, right there. Big sack fumble to secure the win for the Wolverines. And, gosh, if Jim Harbaugh would have lost that one, oh, goodness gracious, it would have been a rough week in Ann Arbor. One more time for Gus.
Hopkins stepped up, sack, loss. Michigan has a football. Survive.
Pretty good, huh, Mark? I like Gus Johnson, man.
Little guy, big voice.
Oh,
little
yeah.
guy, big voice.
Hey, so the Army had two chances to win that game, man. By the way, and we'll get into it next segment. I don't want to, you know, we got to bank or broke next segment as we go over our picks, but that was somebody's lock of the week. Somebody on this crew had the lock of the week.
If you're a Power 5 program, I'm not scheduling Army. I'm not doing it.
Oklahoma's got to go there next year.
Yeah, that's going to be a tough game. That's on the road, right?
Yeah. That's going to be one, man. That'd be cool to go to, huh, Mark?
It will. They're going to have to find a quarterback, but I think that they've just done a really nice job, man. That was impressive.
Disciplined football team.
Yeah, they're super disciplined.
But Army, I mean, so I'm listening to it on the radio because this game's on the same time as mine, but we obviously, our game became such a blowout. We're doing cut-ins, and I know what's going on. And I get in the car as I'm going to the airport. I'm listening to the end of regulation, and then I'm listening to overtime in the car. Army had a chance to kick a field goal and win it at the end of regulation, right? And they miss.
It was a long one, and it was just a little wide right, and maybe a little short. I'm not sure, but that yeah, they had a chance to win that one, and then being down there on the goal line, you know, right there,
they fumble,
and they threw an interception.
Oh, okay. It was interception?
It was a bad pick. Yeah, they took a timeout, and it was third down, and the guy rolled out to his right, and you know, they just don't throw the football very much, and they couldn't get it in. You're right. The execution, their defense was good. They stuffed Michigan on two fourth down plays when Michigan could have kicked a field goal late in the game, and that was a big effort. The other half of that big rivalry in the Big Ten, Ohio State, I was leery of how Ohio State would play, and I kind of talked about this a lot in the preseason, that Cincinnati might go in there and have a chance. And they did not have a chance. They played awful. Ohio State looked good. So right now, the balance of those two schools, Michigan and Ohio State, I think Michigan, it looks like Ohio State continues to have the upper hand in that rivalry, at least based on two games.
Couple of takeaways I have from that game. This is two straight weeks now. Justin Fields is for real. I think Justin Fields, he's going to be legit.
Even an upgrade from last year, possibly?
I think so. Just different. You know what I mean? It's a different dynamic. And this is what I thought going in, is that with his ability to run the football, how that makes a defense have to scheme, right, and how you can really hold backside defenders, I thought that was going to open up a lot for J.K. Dobbins. He had a huge day. I think he's primed for a big year just because I don't know if he's the thrower of Haskins. I'm not saying – I mean, Haskins, had 50 touchdowns, but – the dynamic he brings to the offense, it just changes the way you have to defend those guys, and their defense, I think, is good. So one takeaway, Justin Fields is legit. This Ohio State team is really good, but it also tells me this, Mark. UCLA stinks. I think Oklahoma is going to go to L.A. this week and steamroll them. I mean, UCLA, the fact that, you know, Cincinnati was able to beat them the way that they did a week before, and then what UCLA did at home against San Diego State, I thought this would be a year Chip Kelly get it going the right direction. That game told me a lot about Ohio State, but it also told me quite a bit about UCLA and what they aren't.
Yeah, especially at the quarterback position, a really highly recruited kid, but it is not translating to this level.
No.
Not right now.
No, it's not.
Okay, you
not
ready to transition into the 2:30 games? Man, Clemson and A&M, I love the game plan that Jimbo Fisher had early in the game. He was going to run the football, it was just going to kind of try to take the crowd out of it, keep Clemson's offense off the field, and it was working. And then, you get a turnover, and Clemson scores, and then at that point, it's just they were battling uphill all day. So it was another really impressive effort from the Clemson football team. That was, I thought, impressive.
It was, and this will be featured next segment, so I don't want to spoil it too much, but the final minute of that game was probably as interesting as anything I saw in the second half, because I thought A&M and early on, like you said, we were on a text chain, Mark, and A&M was really stepping up and making some plays, and it's 0-0 going to the second quarter. And I thought, you know, the end of the second quarter, end of the third quarter, it's when Clemson kind of flexed its muscle and showed just how good they were. I thought, how cool was it to see Jake Venables out there making plays for Coach V? Little Jake, man. Coach Venables' son, he's a redshirt freshman. He's out there playing, making plays, and he had the face paint on. He was dialed in, and I remember that little redheaded kid running around, Mark. He couldn't have been 2 or 3 years old when I got to Oklahoma. It's just crazy to watch him. He's going to be a stud out there. He's like 6'1", 230, and I think he's going to have a great understanding of the defense, but that was a little bit of a highlight for me just watching Jake Venables out there making plays.
That was good. That really was good. Texas and LSU. I was telling you that I really want to like Eddie O. I like a lot about him. I like the way that he talks.
You don't like him. Come on, Mark. You're lying to yourself.
But I think that they've got Eddie O surrounded now with coordinators that he likes, and they can go out there and get some things done, because Joe Burrow, to me, was the biggest story of the weekend. He was the number one guy. I mean, to go into Texas on the road, a lot different than what he did in week one, to go win that game throwing the football, and LSU's got a ton of wide receivers. They always have. They've got a ton of skill position athletes. And LSU's for real, man. They're in the national championship hunt. I don't know if they're going to beat Georgia. I don't know if they're going to beat Alabama. But I think that they are going to be competitive in those games. But I thought that was the big deal of the weekend to me. And that game was every bit worth the advertisement, man. I mean, I'm glad that I watched it. It was a fun game. Texas is good. They just weren't good enough on Saturday night. But that was a lot of fun.
I didn't get a chance to watch every bit of it. I definitely caught the last, pretty much most of the second half. I only had so much I could do. I had the iPad going with OU. I had the iPhone going with OSU. And then I was just kind of keeping update. But then once Oklahoma and Oklahoma State did their thing, I kind of flipped over. Landon was able to watch the bulk of that LSU-Texas game. And I don't want to give out awards in a losing effort, but where that game looked like it was going heading into halftime, I give Texas a ton of credit for the way they came out of halftime, get a stop. They put together an unbelievable drive, I thought, to kind of set the tone of the second half. And then it was kind of a track meet back and forth and back and forth. And, you know, my big thing is, you know, we talked about Michigan. There was two offensive coordinator hires that were highly publicized and highly talked about that were supposed to change the trajectory of their programs. One was Josh Gattis at Michigan. That has not lived to be, you know, at least through 2 weeks. That hasn't come to fruition yet. The other was Joe Brady. It has at LSU. And that's where I give, to your point, I give Ed Orgeron a lot of credit. He's kind of an old school guy. He's a defense-like coach. And, you know, he's an old school guy. He wants to line up, run it down your throat, play in a phone booth, kind of like most LSU football has traditionally been. But you know what he said? We can't continue to go this route if we want to beat Alabama, if we want to get to a national championship. We got to utilize our talent. So they go down to New Orleans. They get Joe Brady. They fire Joe Brady in. They've spread it out. And what Joe Burrow's done in this offense is really one of the biggest stories in all of college football to this point. That was the performance of the year so far. He was incredible. And let's go ahead and roll it. This was the play of the weekend. 3rd and 17, LSU's up 6. Sam Ellinger's got it going at this point, right? Sam Ellinger, as much we talk Joe Burrow, Sam Ellinger was great against a much better LSU defense than what Texas had. I thought he lived up to the hype too. But it's a 6-point game, 3rd and 17, right? And you would think conservative mode. You got the lead. You don't want to make a big mistake. But this coaching staff, they trusted Joe Burrow, and this was the play of the weekend. It was a knockout punch, Reese. But, Mark, I just – how big was that? I even texted you guys. I said, uh-oh, looks like Ellinger's going to get his chance to make his Heisman moment, right? Because that's what it's set up for. The table was set for Sam Ellinger at home to get the ball back with around 2 minutes left, down 6 with a chance to go down and win the football game. But Joe Burrow, they bring pressure. He steps up. I thought he did a great job climbing the pocket, finds his target, and Jefferson takes it to the house. That was a big-time football play and really impressive from Joe Burrow.
It was. Okay, we got to take a break. We got Bank or Broke coming up next segment. We still need to get into a couple of late games in the Pac-12, in which we had one upset, and then one team performed a lot better than I thought they would, and that was USC. So we'll take a short time out. I'm at Automax Hyundai. 300 cars in stock, price to sell right now. They got 8 grand off the SUVs, up to 1,500 off most vehicles here, so come see the all-new Palisade. First true third-row vehicle from Hyundai here at Automax Hyundai in Norman. We're on the mile. On the east side of the highway between Robinson and Maine. Find out who may bank and who went broke when we return. Stay tuned.
The Morning Animals.
You know I'm going through some stuff.
It broke. College football. Tell you what, that the LSU-Texas game was interesting because the line of kickoff had gotten over 7. So that wasn't good. If Vegas, if somebody took the 7.5 in that game and they laid it 4.5, 5, 5.5, 6, 6.5, 7, all the way up there, that was probably a bath for Vegas. Okay, so here's how it went this weekend. My picks, 2 and 3. Lock of the week, T&W Tire, Missouri, easy winner.
Nailed
West
it.
Virginia, not good. Missouri, better, bounce back. I still think they've got some concerns, but West Virginia, they're in the ninth spot of the Big 12 to me right now. Dusty, good week, 4 and 2. More bad luck, though. Lock of the week.
My locks suck.
Miami,
I can
Florida.
Pick games. I just can't pick locks. Mark, and I had Nebraska. How about Nebraska starts with a 17-0 lead? Oh, that's a tough loss for Scotty Frost. It's a
I
good
could
game.
Believe they gave that game up. It was a really good game. I mean, you had two back-to-back long-distance plays, a flea flicker that went 96 yards.
Yeah.
Longest play in Colorado football history. Nebraska comes back and goes 80 yards the next series. I thought that was a really good game. I watched some of that. And then Matt Ravis, lock of the week, Army.
Yeah, that was
excellent
a bad pick,
pick, sir.
Huh?
He goes
3-2.
Pick, sir. So, just so we throw it out there, on the year, I'm in the lead. I don't plan on changing that all year. 6-4, making money for folks. Mark 5-5. Ravis 5-5 after 3-2 week, but I'm bringing up the rear, 0-2 in my locks. Mark 2-0 in his locks, and Matt Ravis 1-1 with his locks. And what's crazy, Marcus, like the two I lost, they didn't lose badly. Nebraska, I mean, that was a wild game if you watched it. And they could have easily covered, but I give Colorado credit. Miami, they messed around and went down 17-3 early, but then they fight and climb back, and they take a 5-point lead, Mark, with about 3 minutes left. And North Carolina has a 4th and 20, okay? A 4th and 20 with under 3 minutes to go, and they convert, go down, score, get the 2-point. And instead of it looking like I was going to push, or if they don't get that 4th down, maybe even get a win somehow, they lose outright by 3, and I lose my lock of the week for a second straight week. I'm telling you, I've been – the week before, it was Northwestern on a sack fumble with 20 seconds. And this week, I got the MAC attack. So I got to do a better job of my locks. But, Mark, my UCF pick was really good. They rolled
I agree.
Florida Atlantic. You and I both were on Missouri. I had Tulsa. That was a really good pick. Tulsa had a nice showing out at San Jose State, both sides of the ball. They easily covered the 6.5. And the other one that was easy money, Iowa minus 19.5 on Rutgers. Fade the Scarlet Knights. That's easy money right there. So I thought it was a good week. You guys both, how about Tennessee? You guys look good early on Tennessee.
Oh, no. That was pretty embarrassing. That was a bad loss for them, that game. That was a really good situation, and Tennessee is just not good. They're not very good. Good bounce-back spot for them, and they couldn't hang on and take out BYU. I heard earlier in the week, you know, when you were doing the game, the Syracuse-Maryland game,
yeah.
And then by talking to you and talking a little bit about how Maryland defensively, Syracuse defensively was good, but offensively not much. Fat Jack texted me and said, hey, that's one of my plays this week is going to be Maryland. The line has moved, and it's moving for a reason. And so I felt pretty good about that one. And here's how the offensive juggernaut Maryland sounded on Saturday.
Jackson hands it off to Leak. Got to the edge. Touchdown, Maryland.
We thought this would be a Syracuse team that was led by their defense. They're getting shredded so far here in the first quarter. The left side of the offensive line doing a nice job. Okonkwo with the key block. And if you allow Leak to get to the perimeter, he's got dynamic speed as he slips into the end zone. This Terrapin offense making it look easy so far, Jonesy.
Surprisingly so, Dusty.
I was feeling good about my picks at that point. at that time of the day. Yeah, are the two early games on Saturday. I was thinking maybe it was going to be a good weekend. I also had Hawaii. Hawaii did not beat the Beavers, did not cover against the Beavers, but they did beat the Beavers. So they're now 2-0 against the Pac-12. Given 6.5, they won by 3.
Yeah, that was. I did not stick around and watch that one, but that had to be a tough loss.
That
by
was
the way.
Not the final game of the day, though.
Oh, no.
That game was not the final. Yeah, they had a rain delay or a weather delay in the Washington-Cal game, and that one ends at 3 o'clock here, 3:15, something like that. That was nuts. But that's a big win for Cal. Their defense, very legit.
Yes, Justin Wilcox, a heck of a football coach. I mean, he's done a really nice job there. That the biggest takeaway I have for that is the Pac-12, Mark, their chances are dwindling mightily. You know, Oregon still can be in it, but, you know, just I think that Oregon has playing at Washington later. You would have wanted Washington to be ranked as high as possible when that potentially got there. Just I don't know. It's starting to feel through 2 weeks that the Pac-12 is going to be left out once again this year from the college football playoff.
Utah is going to have to do some, you know, they're going to have to win in some places they don't usually win, which is USC and then Washington, if they want to have a representative.
Hey, what about
USC? Look good. I thought, you know, USC, I've been really tough on them for a long period of time. They're playing with which is in all likelihood their third quarterback this year, true freshman, and he came in and lit it up against Stanford. Stanford had no chance of stopping USC.
You spoke too soon, my friend. You'd sent a text.
I did.
And you said, I don't remember what it was, you said something about how bad the USC talent was.
UNC has some players, yeah. USC doesn't. Yeah. But that didn't age well. That didn't age well over the final 30 minutes.
You didn't tweet that. That was just a text,
no,
right?
No, I didn't
okay,
tweet that.
Good. So because at that point, you were right early. I think it was it like 20-3 or 17-3? I know early on Stanford was rolling them. And then that game flipped after that. 17-3 Stanford early lead. And then after that point, it was all USC, man. And I give this Keaton Slovis kid a ton of credit. I thought he looked great. I thought USC, they were able to – they didn't run the football great, but they ran it better than Stanford did. And they just got after him. Graham Harrell, his offense, his throw game, it had itself a ball game. And that was completely one-sided. And the second half is the Trojans roll 45-20 and beat up on the Stanford Cardinal. They got BYU this week. We looked at that daunting schedule for Clay Helton. They're probably going to start the season 3-0, Mark. And
they might.
I don't think many people after JT Daniels went down in the opener, I don't think anybody saw that coming.
Mr. Ravis tried to dip his toe in the NFL waters with 3 NFL picks, and he goes 2-1 in the NFL. Do you know how bad the season-long survivor pools yesterday? There was a lot of fretting going on there because I can guarantee you quite a few survival pools had Philly, and Philly was down 20-7 at that game at one point. Now, they got it going really after the first quarter, and there wasn't much of a threat, even though Washington swung in the back door to get the cover of that game. And then the Seahawks, I think, were another big eliminator pick yesterday, and they barely held on to beat the Bengals.
Zach Taylor had a nice opening game.
I thought they did a good job. Yeah, I thought that was really good. And then the Colts and Chargers. Matt, you had the Colts, right?
That's right. Yeah.
Yep. And they played well enough to keep it close. So
what was the number on that game?
It was a touchdown, 7.
Oh, perfect. Well, there you go. There it was a 6-point win.
In overtime. Yeah, in that line too, I thought was just kind of an overreaction. I mean, the Colts are still good. Obviously, not as good as with Andrew Luck, but Jacoby Brissett was good, and that defense is pretty good, decent too.
Yes, they are.
T.Y. Hilton had a couple touchdowns.
Hey, he looked good.
Go ahead, Mark.
I was just going to say, but we're going to get more into the NFL next hour. We're going to talk to Jake Trotter. We haven't even mentioned the Browns yet. That was a total disaster. Yeah. Total disaster.
Fire.
So game day is going to Ames, Iowa, Dusty. Is that right?
First time ever. Yeah. The Cy-Hawk rivalry. Iowa heading up to Ames. Be a big game for Matt Campbell. A and the Iowa State Cyclones.
I did a story one time. There's a big tailgating area across the street from the stadium at Jack Trice. And went over there and turned a story for Channel 5, and they're doing all kinds of stuff. They're playing beer pong, and I don't know. I mean, it was things that Iowans used to do to pass the time while going to a football game, so they didn't have to keep their mind on the football game. But I bet that's going to be a great environment there.
Oh.
If they'd have played better in the first week, then I would think that, you know, they may be a little bit more fired up, but still, for the first time ever for game day to be there, Matt Campbell, as good as he's done, and then the significance of this game for Iowa State, Dusty, it's
huge.
It's massive.
Huge.
That's what I would be looking for if I was on that game day crew, is someplace like this where it's unprecedented situation for a program like Iowa State, who with a win here can really set themselves up to have an interesting season.
Yes, they can. There's no question, but they better look a lot better than they did in week one, because it took Brock Purdy diving on a fumble against Northern Iowa to escape that game in week one. Now, I expect a better performance, and one good thing for them, they had the week off last week, right? So they got a bye, 2 weeks to prepare for Iowa. I can't wait for that matchup. Nate Stanley's had a good start to the season, already 6 touchdown passes early on. Now, they haven't really played anybody, but I think that's got a chance. And Iowa's defense, their defensive line is legit. They got a defensive end, A.J. Epinesa, is really good. So, as much as I'd like to say I'd love to see Matt Campbell and Iowa State win, I'm leaning Iowa right now. Do we have a point spread on that yet? We got a number?
I'm looking for it right now. That matchup is a problem for Iowa State because they had a hard time blocking people.
I know.
At least Northern Iowa in that game, and so I think that's going to be a problem. Kansas State looked real good, man. They won. I mean, I know Bowling Green's not a very good opponent, but that was a good win for them. They go to Mississippi State, a game that probably they got a better chance to win this year, Dusty, than they would have last year.
Yeah, Kansas State, I totally agree with that. And I think Mississippi State, I think their quarterback, Tommy Stevens, got banged up. So that I don't want to say I'm not going to pick them to win. It was such a mismatch last year. But, yeah, that's going to be a much more interesting game than I think the one last year in Manhattan, where Mississippi State was just too much for them.
Quickly, look ahead here. Here's some opening interesting lines for next week. Oklahoma State, 14-point favorite at Tulsa. Maybe a little short from what I was expecting.
Oh,
but
I picked
that shows the respect
14?
For the Tulsa defense.
14. I picked last night on TV 34-21 OSU, so I didn't even know what the line was. That's pretty close.
You're right on the number. Iowa is 1.5-point favorite at Iowa State, and I think that line may move the other towards Iowa. Like I said, I just think the matchup is going to be tough for
So what's the number? I'm sorry.
Iowa State, 1.5.
Ooh, I like Iowa to win.
TCU is a 1-point favorite at Purdue.
Ooh, that's an interesting matchup.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
That's a and very interesting matchup.
Oklahoma, 21.5-point favorite at UCLA.
I picked 42-17 on TV last night.
Texas Tech has opened up a 2.5-point favorite at Arizona. So there's some games this week that are going to make or break the perception of the Big 12. This has been the, last week you had the one with Texas and LSU. I don't think Texas did anything to hurt its reputation by losing that game. They played well. But this week, those are big games, like Tech, Arizona. It tells you what the body of the conference will be. You know, if you lose a lot of these games in the Big 12 this week where you're playing Big 10 teams or teams that you have a chance to beat, then the league's going to suffer from that a little bit.
I thought Texas, I didn't think that Sam Ellinger, the offense, played great. Now, we knew Texas' secondary and their defense with so many new players, they were going to have some issues, and it kind of played out that way. But I don't think you walk away from that going, boy, Texas stinks. LSU just overpowered them. That was a knockdown dragout. So, I thought that they definitely garnered some respect. Nothing to really hold their heads about. West Virginia is who we thought they were, Mark. I mean, it's going to be a long season at Morgantown for Neil Brown. I'm going to tell you this, though, man. The team I was really high on, they haven't played great opponents. It was UTSA and it's Stephen F. Austin. But so far, Baylor, they look legit. I can't wait for that week four matchup against Iowa State. I think that's going to be in Waco. Matt Campbell, and coming off this Iowa game, they better hope they get out of that thing healthy, because I think Baylor is going to be loaded and ready to roll.
Baylor may be favored in that game if Iowa State doesn't block Iowa. I mean, because that's a bet. If you can't block somebody else and they really are strong in the defensive line, you just removing the football is almost impossible. All right, we got to take a break. We're going to come back and get one more segment of college football in here. Then we'll get to the NFL because there's so much to talk about in the NFL yesterday. today at 2 o'clock. I'm going to ask the Ultimate if he would like to buy out of our Ravens-Steelers bet. Probably a pretty good time to do that. We are here at Automax Hyundai, the number one Hyundai dealer in the state. 300 in stock, price to sell right now. So get in here and see us. They've got the all-new Palisade, the first third-row vehicle from Hyundai here, and great deals. They're making deals other dealers won't. Automax Hyundai in Norman. Stay tuned to the Monsters of the Midday.
Sports Animal Soundbite.
Now, I will admit that I made fun of some
Eastern, the way they lost by luck to Stanford. That was the bad beat of the week. But then this week, that had to be the bad beat of the week. I was mesmerized watching that final drive, Jimbo Fisher's calling timeouts. I know coaches always act as if they don't know the point spread. That was 100% Mark trying to, knowing in a losing effort, he was trying to save the money of his big donors that he knew put money on the Aggies, right? I mean, he was clearly trying to cover the spread there.
There was, yes, there was a definite effort and attempt to cover the spread. So that was pretty interesting. One more college thing, and then I want to ask you about one of my least favorite cities in the country.
Okay.
Fair or foul that they put the LSU band in the top rows of Daryl K. Royal Memorial Stadium?
I'd say that's pretty foul.
I think that's foul. That's foul, that's, man.
That's pretty weak.
You should not put the band all the way there. No, come on.
Now, I'll also say this, though. I don't feel as bad for LSU because did you see what their guys pulled?
Yes.
Going over to the Texas sideline and drinking the water out of water bottles? That was weird.
It was an aggressive move, but during the pregame. There seemed to be a lot of acrimony between those two programs where it wouldn't normally have. I don't think there's any kind of rivalry there, you know? There's no bad blood. Kind of the way it was when OU and Miami played in the 80s, you know? There was really no reason for it to be bad blood, but Miami came out, ran out in the middle of the field in Norman, little, you know, fight brewed, and then those two teams had an unbelievable series for the next 3 years. But anyway, okay. You, Jacksonville, been there once. Not a fan for many reasons, just, I don't know, but I think they're better places to be, but seemed like it might have been a little hot there yesterday, Dusty, because the television truck blew up for CBS and people couldn't even see the game in the second half.
We're going to talk NFL next hour, so I'll save my thoughts on the game that I called for next hour.
How hot was it?
It might have been the epicenter of hell yesterday, Mark. Our girl, Michelle Steele, who was our sideline reporter, she came to us at some point in the second quarter, and she said that the, you know, whatever they used to measure the heat index, it was 120 on the field. And I believed it. I mean, it was ungodly hot. To your point, I believe it was in the fourth quarter. I've never heard of this happening. Nobody in my radio booth, and we kind of talked to Ian Eagle. He was calling the game next door, and he said he'd never had that happen. The transformer caught on fire. Okay, and they completely lost the CBS feed. Just craziness. And so, Mark, I'm juggling. You know, I got a lot of things going on the weekends. And I was in Maryland doing that game on ESPN on Saturday, and boom, heading to Jacksonville after the game, calling Kansas City Jacksonville. And then, my new gig with News 9, doing the Blitz on Sundays. They're awesome, man. The people at Griffin are incredible. They gave me some really cool toys, and I've got equipment to where I can do a live shot. So I'm setting up my first ever on-site live shot by myself. And I try to do it from the booth. You know, Mark, where it's air-conditioned, nice
right.
and cool,
that
and have
sense.
the stadium in the backdrop. So I get it all set up, and, you know, got talking to the guys back in Oklahoma City, and they're like, man, we can't see you. There's not enough lighting in that booth, and because the shadows from back in the stadium, you're going to have to go outside. And I'm like telling them, like, guys, I don't know if you realize where I'm at right now, but it is ungodly hot, and I am a terrible sweater, right? So, but I'm like, you know what? It's showbiz. You got to get it done, Mark. You can appreciate this. You got to get the live shot. It doesn't matter. You just got to make it work. So then I gather my stuff, and I'm carrying around this. You know, I've got it's a camera stand, and I'm carrying it around, and I've got all my stuff, and I'm trying to find the right spot, and they've already got the field closed off, so I can't go to the field. So now I'm walking around outside the stadium, I'm trying to find the right shot, and by this point, I'm full-blown lather. I mean, I'm sweating, and I'm just now getting started. I haven't even started to try to do the live shot. I'm just trying to find where I'm going to set up to do the live shot. So I'm looking around, and I see some really nice palm trees right there on the outskirts of the stadium. I'm like, oh, that'd probably look pretty good. So I try to set it up there, and by this point, I'm a sweaty mess. And so now I'm a little bit frazzled, and I get the shot set up, and I'm talking to him back in Oklahoma City, and I'm telling him, like, guys, it is crazy hot. Like, I mean crazy hot. So we're out there, and I'm doing this live shot, and we're making it through the blitz. And I'm sweating so bad. I've got like on these what is it? Let me see here. Hang on one second. Travis Matthew. I've got these Travis Matthew pants, the golf pants. Okay. And I wore them on purpose knowing that it'd be hot there. And so they breathe well. And so I've got these Travis Matthew pants on, and I look down, and from my ankles to my waist, I am just completely drenched. At this point, I have sweat dripping off my fingertips, and it's dripping off my nose. And to the point that while I'm doing the live shot, the sweat is rolling down, and it's going down my makeup, and it's in my eyes to where I can barely even open my eyes, and they're stinging profusely. I'm just thinking to myself, this is going to look awful. I don't know what they did. I don't know how they made it work. But I'll be darned if once it aired and I was able to see it, you could barely even tell I was sweating, and it actually turned out and looked pretty good. But in the moment, Mark, I thought it was – I just thought it was just an absolute disaster, and there's no way we're going to be able to run this. But I don't know what they did. I don't know if they've got some kind of wizard, if they have something. But I was as sweaty, nasty, and disgusting a mess as you could possibly imagine in that ridiculous Jacksonville sweltering heat when I was doing that live shot. And I just thought to myself, this is about as bad as it gets. And I made it on my flight. I think I was next to the last person to walk on my flight, and I was still cloaked in sweat. But as
the bad part
goes,
about sweating like that is when you are – when you, like, if you have to walk a long ways, you're having to go someplace, he's not really sweating at that point. The sweat really starts when you stop and when you have to stop. Especially if there's no breeze and no, and it's hot like that. Yeah, the waterworks, I'm sure, were impressive.
I don't know how, though. Somehow the shadowing or the shading, I don't know. You could not really tell, but I'm going to tell you, I felt it. I mean, like, you know how it starts to drip off the nose, Mark? That's when you know it's, like, crazy hot. The dripping off the nose and off the fingertips, but
the worst thing that happened to me in TV that way was I was shaving right before the broadcast one day about 6 o'clock. So it's in the news. So we get to go out there at 6:30 with sports. I cut the living crap out of my chin, and it will not stop bleeding. So shout out to the Lost Ogle. They actually captured it. But anyway, I had to go out there with like something attached to the chin, or it would have just been gushing blood. Probably should have called in a backup that day, but there's pictures of that out there online. So
it gave me a new — I will say this to any and all news anchors out there, local or national news people that have to go out and do live shots in the different elements. I have a whole new appreciation for what goes into that. I give it up to you. That was interesting yesterday. But at the end of the day, Mark, as long as you get the shot and it comes off well, it's a win, right?
So it's a win. It's a huge win. Okay, we got to take a break. I'm at Automax Sunday and an Automax Monday. We're at the Norman Store, I-35, the Mile of Cars. Next hour, we're going to get into the NFL. What does Dusty think about the Browns, the Cowboys,
yeah,
the Steelers? There were some really interesting performances over the weekend of week one of the NFL, and we got two more games to go tonight. Stay tuned to the Monsters on the Sports Animal.
Take the sports animal with you wherever you go, anytime, anywhere.
Football Giants, really, game wasn't that close. Cowboys up 35-10 heading into the fourth quarter. That offense was rolling yesterday, Mark. Dak Prescott looked sensational. Kellen Moore hit it out of the park in his debut as the Cowboys offensive coordinator, spreading the ball around. Four different pass catchers with touchdown receptions. You heard the Zeke touchdown. Again, Giants aren't that good, but hard if you're a Cowboys fan, or even if you're not to walk away from that game very impressed, Marcus.
Hey, the Giants aren't that good, but look, they got players. I mean, Saquon Barkley had a really nice run at the beginning of the game on the screen. And in the NFL, you win, and it's impressive. I mean, it's not like this is college football and the state schools over the weekend. I think even what Baltimore did, I know Miami's bad. I know that you know, we talked about their season over and under total is at 5. But I thought that the Ravens looked great yesterday. Mark Ingram's an upgrade of any back that they've had. And then Hollywood Brown stretching the field was awesome. And so I think the Ravens, the AFC North, boy, that changed pretty quickly yesterday, perception leading up to the season and what happened actually in week one, because the Browns can't block anyone. Baker Mayfield was harassed all day. And I don't know how they're going to fix that problem, Dusty.
Yeah, I'm fully with you. They struggle. But, I mean, okay, let's break it down here a little bit. I thought Baltimore, they had the most impressive outing of the day, right? I mean,
yes.
What they were able to do, I mean, they outgained Miami by over 440 yards. 59-10 kind of tells it, but 42 points in the first half. Lamar Jackson was incredible. And you're right, Mark Ingram really gives them an outstanding running back, a power running back in the backfield. I was so happy for Marquise Brown yesterday, Mark. I mean, a lot of people, oh, he's gone to, you know, receiver hell with Lamar Jackson. And, man, he made his presence felt early and often in the National Football League. Mark Andrews, 8 grabs for 108, and he had a touchdown. A lot of, you know, he had a big preseason. A lot of people thought, even last year at the end of the year with Jackson, he kind of came on. So it kind of seems like those two former Sooners are going to be featured in this offense. Justice Hill had 7 carries yesterday, only 27 yards. But that is Oklahoma North up there in Baltimore, and that's your pick to win the AFC North. And, man, they weren't just the most impressive team in that division. They were the most impressive team in all of football yesterday. So I was happy to see Marquise Brown, Mark Andrews have some success yesterday against Miami. As far as Cleveland goes, I thought Delanie Walker, tight end of the Tennessee Titans, said it best in the postgame.
Now, I'm going to be honest with you, man. They were who we thought they were. If you want to crown them, crown them. You feel me? Crown them. This is a football thing. You can say what you want to say. Talk is big, but you still got to play the game. And that's where we went. We heard all the talk, but they didn't play a game yet. And then today we showed it. We played that game, and we came away with the W.
I thought that was good stuff by Delanie Walker. He channeled his inner Dennis Green. They are who we thought they were. You want to crown them? Crown them. Nobody's crowned in Cleveland after what they did yesterday. They couldn't protect Baker. That's one thing. He was sacked 5 times, harassed all day. He thought he kind of got desperate trying to force the ball where it didn't need to, 3 picks. But Mark, my biggest problem probably is the lack of discipline. 18 penalties? That's what worries me the most. And that's what I remember talking to Tim Hasselbeck at Pro Day. And he told me he was really worried about Freddie Kitchens being the head coach and that kind of allowing the players to do whatever they want. He told me then he's worried about the accountability on the football team. And I kind of thought, nah, I don't know. You know, Freddie Kitchens, I think he'll be – I don't really know much about Freddie Kitchens, but it's only 1 week, Mark, but that seems exactly right, doesn't it? I mean, doesn't that seem like a team
that has no
accountability and is a bunch of individuals as opposed to a team?
Yeah, I thought – there's no way that this doesn't reflect very poorly on Freddie Kitchens in his first game as a hire, is that they had all those penalties. And they were crushing penalties, too. They weren't like – they were 15-yard, and it did look like they just didn't have much of a plan. And so I hate to make an overreaction on Cleveland based on 1 week, but if I had stock in them, I would sell it right now. I just don't – the problems on the offensive line is going to be tough to overcome.
Let's hear from Freddie Kitchens here.
That's just as much our coach's fault, my fault, players' fault. Everybody takes some blame for that.
I know. Yeah, no doubt. 18 penalties for 182 yards in the National Football League. Unacceptable. Unacceptable. They got embarrassed yesterday, Mark. And, I mean, as much hype as there's been around any team, I mean, they welcome it, right? They wanted it. They wanted the hype, and everybody hyped them up, and I'm still – I hope the Browns figure it out. I'm not going to be one that's going to root against the Browns, but I just thought with all eyeballs on them, with everything going into the season, You know, I picked them to win the North. You picked them to win the North. Even Brian. I mean, all of us on our picture. Everybody's picking them. All the tickets in Vegas to win the division, and people picking them to win the Super Bowl, and just all that stuff. To go out there and get beat by 30 on your home field and be as sloppy as you were, that was, man, that was an embarrassing performance.
It was bad. I thought the Vikings played really well, offense and defense. They held the Falcons in check all day. And Dalvin Cook was good.
That's the key, right?
He's fast. He's a huge upgrade over anything that they've had at the running back spot in Minnesota for quite a while since Adrian Peterson was going good. So I thought I was really impressed with them. The Cardinals-Lions game, I watched a lot of the Cardinals-Lions game yesterday, Dusty, and the Lions defense was swarming in the first half. Really, there wasn't much of anything that Kyler Murray could do. He looked kind of lost. But he got it fixed in the second half. He came back and he played pretty well to get them to tie that game. But that was a bad, bad loss or bad tie for Detroit to be ahead the way they were through most of the game. And there was really a lot of gaffes from the Cardinals' defense, leaving guys wide open. Couldn't cover Amendola that they get out of there with only a tie.
Let's hear from the quarterback making his first NFL start, Kyler Murray, about the comeback.
I mean, at some point, something had to happen, and that was kind of the mindset. I felt like I was going to do anything in my power to kind of get it going. Felt really bad, at times. But like I said, it ended up opening up. Just got to keep staying the course, keep fighting, and that's what we did.
I saw this game, and I want to say my first time I really took notice. It was 24-6, and all I could think about was Mark is going to bury the Arizona Cardinals.
It wasn't good for Kingsbury in the first.
All I could think about, and I looked at the stat line, and at that point Kyler was 13-31, right? He was not. The offense was not doing anything, and I thought, man, because I liked Arizona to win the game, and I thought their offense would do some good things. I thought, man, Mark is going to absolutely roast these guys. And then all of a sudden I look up, and next thing I know, this game's headed to overtime. And I just thought, man, what a big-time performance by Kyler Murray, Mark. You know, rookie, nothing's going right. You're heading into the fourth quarter. You're down big. You know, how are you going to respond? It's 14-6 heading into the fourth quarter. And he brings his football team back, gets into overtime, and they easily could have won this football game. Again, it's a tie. It's not a win. But for as bad as the first three quarters were, to put that behind you and lead that comeback and at least not get the loss, I thought that was a big-time way to close the game out for Kyler Murray. And once he got it going, man, they were tough to stop.
Tampa Bay Buccaneers, I thought with Bruce Arians there, they're going to be a lot better. Jameis Winston would be improved. Jameis Winston may have been the biggest goat in the NFL yesterday, not in a good way. Two pick sixes, and the Buccaneers lose at home. Three picks overall for Jameis. The quarterback situation, I don't know how many more chances he's going to get, but I don't think that you can continue to keep him at that position if he's going to go throw three picks every week. So that was not good at all.
Bruce Arians, Bruce Arians was brought up in our coaches' meetings.
Blame it on some of his hat. I mean, he had this white, that weird-looking white hat on yesterday. That wasn't very good. He's going to have to upgrade his hat.
He's a hat guy. He's definitely a hat guy. Seattle-Cincinnati was a good game, came down to the very end. I thought that was interesting. I did not agree. Did you see that final play? I did not think that was a fumble by Andy Dalton. Was his arm not going forward? Did you see that?
Yeah, I did. That was a tough call.
They reviewed it, and they stayed with the call, but that surprised me. I had Chiefs Jaguars. I'm going to tell you what, Mark. I don't know how. I mean, it's hard to say. 26 points. Gardner Minshew looked fantastic. 22 of 25. You know, Nick Foles throws a touchdown pass on the second drive, threw a great ball to DJ Chark. Go ball. I mean, he threw it so high, brings rain down. It just drops it right in the bucket. I mean, it was a great pass, but as he delivers the pass, he gets hit, breaks his clavicle. In comes Gardner Minshew, mustache and all, and he was excellent. I mean, he was 22 of 25, 275. He had two touchdowns. He had a pick, but the pick really wasn't his fault. Leonard Fournette just He didn't. He kind of batted the ball up, and then it was kind of a tip drill. But I thought that was impressive. But you want Nick Foles back. In lieu of that, we've seen today Josh Dobbs has been traded from Pittsburgh to Jacksonville. Probably be Gardner Minshew's backup until Foles returns from that injury. But the story of that game was the Kansas City offense, Mark. They scored on each of their first seven possessions. And, I mean, it didn't take long at all. Sammy Watkins had himself a ball game, which sucks for people like me who had him on their bench in fantasy. At 46.8 points in fantasy, he went for a 198 and three touchdowns. He's fast. Travis Kelce is a matchup nightmare. I mean, there was big plays galore. Patrick Mahomes, Mark, had 313 the first half. I mean, it was against – this wasn't against the Dolphins. This was against the Jacksonville Jaguars defense that's, you know, last 2 years been one of the best in the league. So, for any thoughts that this Kansas City – and then Shady McCoy in the second half got it going, looking like vintage LeSean McCoy. For anyone that thought that this Kansas City offense was going to slow down, I think they're poorly mistaken. And one thing, though, Tyreek Hill, he injured his clavicle, too. He got tackled on the sidelines on a little out route and by Jalen Ramsey, and he went down. And I don't think he's going to have surgery, but he will miss several weeks. But they've got so many weapons, Mark. Not that they don't need him. They do need him. But I don't think it's going to slow down this Kansas City offense much. It definitely didn't without him for most of the day yesterday. So good that he got his contract on Friday before the injury.
Two more games that I want to talk about. I thought the Panthers would beat the Rams. The Rams did enough to win in the game. There was one costly turnover for the Panthers in the first half. They missed a field goal. Graham Gano's not out there, and he's not active right now, so that kind of hurt the Panthers. Christian McCaffrey's a fantasy beast, and he is a beast in the NFL as well. He's impressive what he was able to do against that defense. And then what happened last night? What happened to the Steelers? I mean, you know, remember I had Todd on last week. Todd said he kind of liked Pittsburgh, possibly even win the game in New England, and they laid a complete and total egg.
Well, I thought this play, give me number eight, Ravis. This play kind of surmised the entire night for Pittsburgh.
False start. Offense. All the linemen except for the center. 5 yard penalty. Replay, second down.
I mean, that was wow. How bad was that? I mean, I know Tom Brady has Big Ben and Tomlin's number, but I just know this. We said this before, but, man, the Patriots, they're playing chess and everybody else playing checkers, man. I mean, and they're adding Antonio Brown, which we haven't even discussed yet. I mean, Philip Dorsett. I mean, Josh Gordon had a nice night. I mean, it doesn't matter. Tom Brady, I know at some point he's got to take a step back, Mark. I know Father Time, it's undefeated, but even at 42 last night, Mark, I mean, he's just stepping up in the pocket and putting the ball in the money time and time again. They looked unbelievable last night. I mean, obviously Pittsburgh looked bad, but it's also a big part of that is New England is that good once again.
They are that good. Antonio Brown's situation seems really fishy to me. But it's a shame because you act like that, you shouldn't really ever come out with the best possible result, which is what Antonio Brown has done. He just didn't want to play for the Raiders, right?
One thing I'm not even gonna attempt to do today is try to rationalize or try to analyze the actions of one Antonio Brown. I don't know, Mark. I have no idea. It does kind of feel like at some point, I don't think this was like we talked off the air, and you kind of made this point. I don't think that this was like the plan from the beginning. But I do think there probably came a point in time where he's like, I don't want to play for the Raiders. I want to go win a championship and play with Tom Brady. And I think that, you know, so there was probably, I don't know, at what point was that? I don't know. But, I mean, I will say, as we're on a text chain, and it is true, like, if Antonio Brown's all about the money, well, this wasn't smart. I mean, because he is leaving $20 million guaranteed on the table. Like, he's still getting a good deal. I think he's still getting $10 million guaranteed and a $15 million deal for 1 year in New England and probably a chance to win a Super Bowl ring. But at the same time, you know, he had $29 million guaranteed in Oakland. So, he is leaving a lot of money on the table. I don't know, man. I totally agree with what you said. I was texting with several college coaches over the weekend about this, and I got kind of the same message from a bunch of them. that they hate the fact that he acts the way he does, and it appears to some that he got exactly what he wanted. He got out of a bad situation. He's still going to make a bunch of money for 1 year, and he just got added by the best team in football. So, you know, again, I know he's leaving money on the table, but I hate that you can act as unprofessional as he has throughout this whole situation and end up on the best team in football making good coin. It just,
we're going to get our answer. We're going to get our answer to this just by watching this play out. I mean, if he is kind of unhinged and off his rocker, then he's not going to conform to the Belichick ways. And I think that he'll do some things that will probably get him released. So
it won't
we'll
shock
see.
Me. I mean, he's just, I know this much. The one thing I'll say is that at least New England, they've got, with Bill Belichick and Tom Brady, they've got good enough leadership and upper management that if Antonio Brown doesn't abide by their rules, they'll show him the door quickly. Right. And I would be stunned if this contract isn't, there isn't a bunch of yellow tape on it, right, Mark? Like, I would almost guarantee that New England has, they're going to make sure that Antonio Brown, you know, conducts himself the right way for him to earn all of his money. I don't think that they would not have signed him to a contract without protecting themselves in some way, shape, or form. So, look, they've done this before. I mean, Josh Gordon's a situation, as we see right now. They went and signed Albert Haynesworth before. That didn't work out. The Randy Moss situation was a receiver that was disgruntled in Oakland, and he went there, and it worked out very well. They've been willing to take on big personalities and people that come in with some baggage, and it's worked some, and it hasn't worked some. But the one thing about them is that they're smart enough, they're well-run enough, that if it doesn't work, they'll cut bait right now. And the reality is, he's a luxury, not a necessity. Like, they don't need him to win another championship, but boy, if they do get him to fall in line and they have him, it's probably as much weaponry as Tom Brady's had in his entire career. And my brother just let me know that I'm watching too much Big Brother because I've now quoted Mickey with Chess and Checkers, Marcus.
I think Chess and Checkers is a good saying. That's a good saying. I think you can use it even if Mickey uses it all the time. I'll tell you what. If you want to make a deal, come to Automax Hyundai in Norman. They will take care of you. New, pre-owned. You name it, they've got it. They've got the all-new Palisade, the first third-row vehicle from Hyundai. Got some great-looking cars in here on the showroom floor. So get by and see us on the mile in Norman. Jake Trotter going to tell us what's happening in Cleveland next. Stay tuned to the Monsters.
The Morning Animals.
I do have some breaking bad news.
Browns and the opener yesterday against the Titans.
You know, I really believed that was going to be their good luck charm, and that was not the case. I mean, I thought it was conceivable that they might lose because, you know, so many new parts on both sides of the ball. I figured it might take a little while for them to gel. But to get blown out like that and completely embarrassed where the home fans are leaving the game with 9 minutes still to go in the fourth quarter, like that was completely stunning to me. And, you know, a lot of it was the penalties, obviously. I mean, you commit 18 penalties in a game, your most in 68 years. You're going to have a hard time beating anybody. But I do think there were some other underlying issues that really give me concern for how good this team can be, even if they clean up a lot of the discipline and composure issues.
Well, the two biggest on-the-field issues to me were the offensive line, and then I thought the, you know, linebacker play. They couldn't cover Derrick Henry on a screen pass. They didn't do a very good job of bottling him up, running the football either. Tight ends were open all day. So those are pretty big concerns, I would think.
Yeah, I mean, I think you have to start with the offensive line. You know, what's hard to really evaluate, and Freddie Kitchens, you know, kind of took the onus off them just now talking about the game, is that when you lose your starting left tackle and then you lose your backup left tackle in the span of two plays or three plays, It in the second quarter, it's hard to know how much of that was your offensive line isn't any good or how much of it is you're just scrambling to try to piece it together. And, I mean, I think it was a combination of both because I don't think the offensive line was particularly good before Greg Robinson was ejected for kicking our old friend from Texas, Kenny Vaccaro, in the head. And then, obviously, Kendall Lamb getting hurt a few plays later, giving up the safety, really put them in a bad spot. But, I mean, listen, we talked about it the offensive line was always going to be the thing that could potentially derail this team. And, you know, if you can't, you know, establish a consistent running game, if you can't protect the quarterback, even though I think at times Baker maybe held the ball on, held on to the ball for a little bit too long, then you're going to have problems no matter how many Odell Beckhams and Jarvis Landrys and Nick Chubbs that you have. So they've got to figure out a way to correct that. And, you know, they're going to have to deal with the guys they have on the team right now.
So, okay, it doesn't feel like a team. And Odell Beckham, great guy to start with. What's the story behind this $350,000 watch? He's going to get fined from the NFL. Why was he wearing it? What, I mean, what is this? Is this a team or is this a bunch of individuals, Jake?
I think it's a fair question. And when you're winning, Dusty, you can get away with all of that stuff. When you're not, you know, receipts are going to get cashed in. And, I mean, you can't do that flashy kind of stuff and then get just beat down by 30 points on your home field. He's not going to be able to wear the watch anymore. The NFL has already reached out to him and the Browns and told him to refrain from wearing that. I guess it violates a league rule because you can't wear hard objects. But it was weird for me because, like, I'm watching this game. It's my first NFL game I've ever covered, and it doesn't even occur to me that it would occur to them to him to wear a watch, much less a, you know, watch that's like on the, you know, salary level of somebody like Al Ashbach, you know, who makes millions. So I think that's the one thing with this team is there's a lot of sizzle and there's a lot of style, but we have not seen the substance yet. And, you know, there's going to be a huge backlash against him if they don't deliver on that end.
Yeah, that seems pretty odd to me. Did Baker come out of the game okay?
He did. You know, I was a little bit concerned for him because he you could tell that he was bothered. You know, his hand was bothering him in that game, late in the game, you know, took a big hit. You know, he was even talking during his post-game press conference, you know, he was kind of favoring it a little bit and immediately went into the x-ray room after talking to the media. So I was just kind of hanging out outside the x-ray room waiting to see, you know, what the verdict was going to be. And he comes out with a wrap on, but, you know, the x-rays were negative, just a bruise. You know, he's probably going to have some pain in practice this week, but should be fine to play. But, you know, again, going back to the offensive line, I mean, you know, they're going to get him hurt at some point. You know who they play in 2 weeks, right? A guy by the name of Aaron Donald, which, after watching that offensive line yesterday, I would be really concerned about, because as it looks right now, they're going to be completely overmatched up front in that game.
Well, I mean, I mean, the Jets have some guys that can rush the passer too. So, I mean, let's not I mean, Quinnen Williams, you know, I would definitely identify where he's coming from. How was Baker? I mean, there's just so much hype coming in, and, you know, he's just been so positive and so upbeat and so out in front. I read some of his quotes, and, you know, it kind of sounds like he's like, well, this is perfect. You know, everybody's going to doubt us now. This is right. You know, we're in a perfect spot. Just how was his demeanor? How was he after what was clearly a really tough loss in the opener?
Yeah, I mean, he was like he usually is after those kind of games, and he hasn't had many of them, but I've been there for, you know, a couple of them, you know, including the Rose Bowl when he was in college, and, you know, he owned it to a large degree, you know, owned the interceptions, owned, you know, there was one play where he had a pick trying to force the ball to Odell, and you couldn't really tell if, like, Odell ran maybe a different route than Baker expected or whatever the miscommunication was, but, you know, he took full responsibility for that interception as well, and even, you know, took blame for some of the penalties and you know, not getting the guys in right spots or whatever. So, but, you know, there was a little bit of defiance at the end when he said, you know, I think he was asked, you know, how do you respond to this? How do you get the team back on track or on track? And he said, you know, something to the degree of it's perfect. You know, everyone is going to throw us in the trash now, and I know how we're going to react to it. So, I mean, we'll see. I mean, Baker, after loss, has usually been pretty good throughout his career. I remember the, you know, back in 2016, they lose to Houston and get blown out by Ohio State out of the gate. And I think by the end of the year, they were maybe one of the two or three best teams in the country with that, you know, D.D. Westbrook, Joe Mixon offense. You know, you go back to the Texas game the year before. It looked like they might, crater after that, and they came back and made the playoffs. So he's traditionally bounced back pretty well off these kinds of games. But, I mean, it's tough. You know, the Jets, even though they fell apart yesterday, are certainly capable, especially on, you know, at home on a Monday night. Then you've got the Rams. And, you know, like, you better start winning some games here because this thing could snowball. They still got the Patriots. Baltimore looked fantastic against the Dolphins, but still, I mean, I think that they're going to be, you know, quality team. You know, you can't write off Pittsburgh either. So, you know, they've got a lot of work to do despite the talent that they still have on this team.
It all kind of started going wrong with the Seibert missed extra point. So
it did.
Is that kind of a fluid situation? Will he continue to have that job, or are they going to go through some more tryouts this week?
Yeah, he's still going to have the job as far as I know. I mean, there's been no indication that they're ready to bail yet. I mean, again, they invested a fifth-round pick, so you know, he's going to get a little bit of leeway. But given how inconsistent he was at the beginning of training camp, like, you know, if he continues to miss kicks, then they're going to have to do something. Because, you know, like, they lost by 30 points. It's not like the 1 point would have mattered. But, you know, it did kind of feel like, oh, man, you know, as soon as he missed it. You know, you could feel a little bit of the air come out of the ball on that, you know, metaphorically speaking. And they never got back the momentum after that missed extra point. And, you know, kicks are the difference between making the playoffs and not. Like, you're either a good team or you're a bad team. But, you know, a couple of field goals here and there, a couple of missed extra points here and there, I mean, that's the difference between going 7-9 and 9-7. And there's no way they can be confident right now that, you know, they're going to make all those critical kicks that are going to be the difference in them making the playoffs. Now, I don't know that field goal kicker is like the biggest issue they have right now, but it is definitely a concern, considering that Seibert, you know, is yet to really demonstrate that he can consistently make kicks in the NFL.
Crazy how this game at the Jets in week two, Monday night, is just massive right now.
It's pivotal. I mean, they could easily be 0-3 if they do not win Monday night. And then at that point,
it could easily be 0-4. At Baltimore, they're going to be an underdog. So, I mean, you need to find a way to get this victory. I hope they get it on track. I was high on Cleveland like everyone else. That was shocking to me just how bad they looked. 18 penalties, 182 yards. I mean, again, the lack of discipline, that's what concerns me the most as much as anything. Obviously, the ability to protect your quarterback, but the lack of discipline, that's got me really questioning Freddie Kitchens. I don't remember seeing a team, you know, take the field and look that sloppy in an opener when there was this kind of expectations. And to me, that's as much as anything a reflection of the coach.
I agree. I mean, I think that was a referendum on sort of their approach to everything, and it kind of made me think of their joint practice they had with the Colts during the second week of training camp, where they were basically getting into fights like every play. And there was a sense that Freddie Kitchens was sort of encouraging that mindset, like, we're not going to take anything from anybody, we're going to impose our will. And, I mean, they certainly did it during the scrimmage part, but they were doing it in the form of extracurricular activity as well. And it almost got to the point where they had to cancel the joint practice, because it was getting so obscene out there with all the fighting. And you just saw it carry over into that game where, like, Greg Robinson, again, is kicking the guy in the head. Miles Garrett's punching Delonte Walker. He was fortunate. You know, he wasn't ejected as well. I mean, it was just a total mess. And, like, you can't say, well, it was just the offensive line, or, well, it was just the secondary. I mean, like, I think it felt like literally every player on the team had a penalty in that game. And, you know, you can't win when you don't have composure and poise in the NFL. You know this, Dusty. I mean, you've got to have discipline, because at the end of the day, penalties and turnovers at any level of football are a huge deciding factor in wins and losses. And, I mean, they got completely dominated in those facets of the game. And I mean, we'll see what they do Monday night, but there's nothing to suggest that, like, all of a sudden they're going to be able to clean all that up overnight. You're either a disciplined team or you're not. And they clearly showed that they've got a long way to go in terms of, you know, being a team that's focused and a team that you cannot rattle. They got rattled, and they got rattled on their home field, and they got rattled by a team that, like, is okay, I guess, but it wasn't like they were playing, you know, the New England Patriots or the Kansas City Chiefs or one of the best teams in the NFL.
The Cleveland fans clearly have not forgotten how to boo. They had plenty of practice at that over the last couple of decades and were able to boo the team off the field yesterday. You have any big plans, dining plans in New York City?
So I have a college buddy who lives in Manhattan, and we are going to find a Greek restaurant on the in Manhattan, I believe, on Sunday evening. So that is the tentative plan to get some legit food out there, and then beyond that, we'll kind of see what happens. But
flaming cheese.
One of the coolest things about the, I'm sorry.
You're gonna have the flaming cheese.
Maybe some fish, maybe some lamb, like a lamb shank. I'm going to order a lot of food, maybe get some Greek wine potentially.
Jeez. Is this on the ESPN dime, or are they just paying you that much money? I mean, we get bottles of wine, just give me the whole damn lamb. I mean, listen to you. I like it.
I tell you what, I mean, one of the biggest advantages to covering the NFL versus covering college football, which you guys know I love doing. So, I mean, for the last few years, I've been languishing in places like Ames, Iowa, which, by the way, may burn down this weekend with game day being there. Manhattan, Kansas. Dusty, you've been there. Mark, you have an affinity for the Wildcats. Waco, Texas. And, I mean, not to cast aspersions on any of those places because I love visiting them, but I've traded that in for New York City, San Francisco here in a couple weeks, going to go up to Boston.
You've gotten bougie,
October.
Man. Listen to you. You're all bougie now. Big timer.
That's right. Jeez. I need to know about getting one of those watches, I guess.
Yeah. Golly. That's nice going to Manhattan. I've slept six in a room at the Holodome before in Manhattan, Kansas. That's not great.
That Holodome is famous. I'm going from one Manhattan to another Manhattan. I'm going for the slightly better one. The
little apple to the big apple.
These smells of chlorine stings the nostrils.
And the yelling from 13-year-old slumber parties as well. Not great.
Hey, Jake, real quick, anything else stick out to you? I mean, I know you're so right there on Cleveland, but you get a chance to peruse around. Anything else in the NFL stick out to you real quickly?
Well, I mean, like, just real quickly, I watched, the LSU-Texas game, and, I mean, like, I have no idea where that version of Joe Burrow came from. Like, he should be in every Heisman discussion right now. I don't think that loss completely knocks Texas out of the mix, but that was an opportunity for the Big 12 that, again, came and went. I think that, LSU is certainly an obvious playoff contender with the athletes they have defensively now with that kind of passing game. So I thought Texas played pretty well. It's got beat by like a better team, which is going to happen. As far as, the NFL yesterday, I mean, New England is going to be scary. I mean, they get Antonio Brown. Now he'll probably behave, now that he's going to be with, Bill Belichick. I didn't get to see the game, but it did sound like Kyler Murray and Cliff started to figure things out there in the second half. So I'm looking forward to kind of seeing some of the highlights of that game because, again, I think that has a chance to be a special partnership. And it sounds like, Arizona, given their expectations, the tie is pretty solid.
Especially when you're down 24-6 heading to the fourth quarter and basically offensively showing no semblance of a life. I think a tie in that case had to be a win for the Cards. Great stuff as always. We'll talk to you again on Wednesday, Jake. Thank you.
Okay, guys. See you later.
As I mentioned, it's an AutoMax Monday. Marcus, what's going on?
AutoMax Sunday in Norman. They've got over 300 vehicles on the lot here ready to make you a great deal. And they're making deals other dealers won't. That's why they sell so many cars. The number one Hyundai dealer in the metro area. So come by and see us at AutoMax Hyundai in Norman on an AutoMax Monday on the mile of cars.
Taking a quick break. We'll wrap things up. We'll hear from Lincoln Riley and much, much more on the Monsters of the Midday.
Sports Animal Soundbite.
My former teammate, he's laughing.
Hey, man, his team went down to Austin, got a big-time win. I just love the fact that they trusted their quarterback, and he's kind of allowed himself to get out of his comfort zone and be willing to throw the football, spread the field. And that final drive, that clinching touchdown drive, I just thought was really big. We see teams so often go conservative, get into a shell. But they put the ball in their quarterback's hands, and Joe Burrow went and won the game for him. Biggest win so far this early 2019 college football season. We got Mark Rogers at AutoMax today. Marcus, before we get into a little bit of Oklahoma State, there was some high school football over the weekend. Your Twitter feed caught my attention. How good is this Bixby team, Mark?
They're really good. They scored 77 points in their first week against one of those teams from Mansfield in Texas. Jinx went down there and beat Mansfield Legacy, which is coached by Chris Melson, former OU quarterback. But I was stunned. I saw the score. I had to ask if it was legit. It was legit. Bixby beat Jinx 57-7. And Jinx has not lost a game by 50 points, I think, ever, going back to a long, long time ago. But anyway, Bixby is the first time they've won at Jinx since 1968. You know, that's a big rivalry, Spartans, Trojans, the whole thing there. And they're good. They had a bunch of turnovers. I don't think if they played again, that would be a 50-point result, but it certainly wouldn't be Jinx as a favorite. And then Union, Broken Arrow shut out Union at Union. It's the first time they've won at Union in about 40 years or 30 years, something like that. So Broken Arrow, Owosso, two of the they're the two top teams in 6A right now. But what Bixby did the other night doesn't bode very well for an incredibly tough district that they're in. They're in or 5 or 6A 2. On this side of the state, you've got Stillwater, Lawton, Midwest City. Choctaw is a lot better this year. Dell City, the team that Matt saw on Friday night, really good. But I think everybody's going to have a long way to go if they're going to catch Bixby this season in 6A 2.
Wow, that's 57-7. That doesn't happen to Jinx, Mark.
No. Oh, it does not.
Wow. That's well, holy cow. That's impressive. Very good. Okay, a couple of things. Oklahoma State. We do have both these games set time-wise. Oklahoma State will be on ESPN2 in Tulsa this week. That'll be a 2:30 kick. I think that's a good spot. I'll be at the same time. I'll be on ESPN, Central Florida, Stanford, and then you've got BYU, USC on ABC, all in that window. Oklahoma will be the Fox game coming out of L.A., and I believe, Mark, that will be a 5 o'clock local, a 7 o'clock local kick, right? That'll be a night game, 5 o'clock on the West Coast. So Oklahoma State fans can enjoy, you know, both games. Everybody in the state won't be a crossover like it was last week. So Oklahoma on Big Fox. It'll be Brock Huard, Joe Davis do a great job. We'll try to get you Brock this week. He was texting me last night some stuff about Oklahoma and his prep. I don't think UCLA is very good. I know we had someone call last week and said FPI says this is the toughest game remaining for Oklahoma. I laughed at it then, laughed at it even more so after UCLA fell to San Diego State for the first time in program history on their home field Saturday. Their offense continues to sputter. They've turned the ball over six times in their first two games. And one thing that came out of Norman this weekend was Alex Grinch's defense was able to get some takeaways. Head coach Lincoln Riley talked about it.
It was the number one thing we talked about all week defensively. I mean, it was turnovers, and they were challenged in every way possible, and we responded and got them. And I thought after we got the one, it felt like it's infectious, man. Turnovers are, but for an offense and for a defense.
He's right. They are. They needed them. They got three. I think Neville Gallimore has really played well, Mark, these first two games. He was very active, had a big tackle for loss early, and then on a hustle play, knocks that ball loose. Brennan Radley-Hiles jumps on it. Good to see. We talked about earlier. Buki was able to get a pick six on a play that I felt like last year he doesn't make that play. So that was good to see. I also thought right along with that, I thought the defense for Oklahoma State against McNeese, again, understanding who the opponents are, but I thought they set the tone. A.J. Green, second play of the game, first pass. He steps in front of it, takes it to the house. We played that call earlier. I'll tell you another guy who's got my attention. I think Malcolm Rodriguez, he's really looked good at linebacker through two games. And also, Mark, I'm going to do my best to get this right, but Amon Bogbemiga, number 11. He's impressed me watching them the first couple weeks. Good blitzer from the second level. He's had a sack in each game and making plays on the other side of the football. So I find this matchup they have. I don't think Oklahoma's matchup with UCLA, I don't think it's going to be much of a game. Whereas I'm intrigued by this game in Tulsa because, you know, the Golden Hurricane, Mark, they showed well in East Lansing. If you look at the numbers and you watched it, their defense, they stood toe-to-toe with Michigan State. They just couldn't block their defensive line. And then last week they go to San Jose State, put up over 530 yards of offense, and again, really shut down on the ground the San Jose State rushing attack. So one thing for me is, can Oklahoma State, will they be able to run the football effectively against Tulsa in that front seven? Big storyline for me.
Well, I think that's it's a huge storyline for Oklahoma State on because if Tulsa's offense can move the football on them, then I think they've got some long-term issues. But I do like some of their individual personnel on the defensive side of the football. So I think this game is going to be pretty telling. And then the Cowboys can go to Austin, and we'll see what happens down there.
Yeah, I'm totally with you. Spencer Sanders looked good. We talked about Talon Wallace.
I thought Drew Brown looked good, too.
Yeah, he did. No, it's good to see him. Really, I mean, again, the competition, but all the quarterbacks, both Oklahoma, Oklahoma State, put up some good numbers. Look pretty darn good. Real quickly, Mark, Monday Night Football tonight. We got a double dip on the slate. I've got a nice lead. I've got Josh Jacobs going, but the guy I'm playing tonight has Drew Brees and Michael Thomas, so it could be one that goes down to the wire for me. Any thoughts on these matchups tonight? I like Broncos against Oakland, and I like the Saints against Houston. What do you think?
I agree with both. I think the Saints defense is really going to get after the Texans. And so I think that I'm expecting Oakland to be really bad. I don't think they're going to be very good at all tonight.
I just need Josh Jacobs to be really good. Mark, where are you at today at AutoMax?
It's been an AutoMax Monday here in Norman, the Norman location, the number one Hyundai dealer in the state. They're making deals other dealers won't, so come by and see us today here on the mile in Norman.
Very good. That's all the time we have. Mark's got one more hour with the Ultimate I'm on a 21-hour break. We'll see you tomorrow on the Monsters of the Midday.
Check out the Sports Animal Facebook page, facebook.com.